The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute, and craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show, live on SiriusXM Channel 111 every weekday at noon East. Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly, and welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show's Weekend Best Of Special. We had a busy week this week. The first trial of former President Donald Trump kicked off in New York City. In fact, we have a jury. Wow, they worked fast. We got into some of the storylines in that trial so far, including the judge going after the former president over supposed jury intimidation. Really? With Vinnie Politan and Jonas Bilbor. We also talked about some of the outrageous comments this week from Katie Couric. Wait until you hear what she said about MAGA voters, Joy Reid on DEI, and more with Andrew Klavan and the fellas from the Ruthless Program. And we had on our friends from National Review, Charlie Cook and Jim Garrity, to talk about a bizarre new lie from President Joe Biden about how his uncle got eaten by cannibals, which didn't happen at all, and the implications it and other comments like it are going to have or not have on the 2024 election. Enjoy, and we'll see you tomorrow. These days, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries, or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it will get you, though? For just $20 per month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from the cell phone company, PureTalk. And this is top-tier coverage on America's most dependable 5G network. Yes, PureTalk gives you the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. The average family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can bring your phone, or you can get great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids. To make the switch, go to puretalk.com/Kelly. When you do, you'll save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company that shares our values. Support our military and veterans, creating American jobs and refusing to advertise on fake news networks. Instead, they come to me so we can bring it to you. Go to puretalk.com/Kelly and make the switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/Kelly. When they hear the concerns expressed by the right half of the country about, you know, the policies that have gotten us here, the culture wars that have completely changed children's existence, their safety, and so on, they respond with just disdain. I mean, just dripping, oozing disdain for these people who might object to their view of how America must be. And that, unfortunately, leads me to Katie Couric, who sat down with Bill Maher and said the following. Take a listen to this, SOT 30.
And I feel like, to your point, Bill, the socioeconomic disparities are a lot, and class resentment is a lot, and anti-intellectualism and elitism is what is driving many of these anti-establishment, which are Trump voters, right, or anti-establishment absolutely voters. So I think that is a huge problem that we have to address. I mean, globalization and, you know, the transition from an industrial to a technological society. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been jealous of what someone else has or resentful. It is such a corroding and bitter, almost bile feeling.
Right.
Wow. Anti-intellectuals who are bitter jealous and corrosive over their envy for her half.
You know, I used to call these people elites without mirrors because they couldn't see how awful they were. But I'm beginning to think that they're elite without windows because they can't look outside and see that Trump, for all his flaws, gave us 4 years without a new war, where this guy has set the world on fire. Biden has, in his weakness and his dithering and his complete constant misunderstanding of the world stage, has brought us very, very close to a widely extended war, not just in the Middle East, but in Ukraine and with Ukraine and Russia. He has his economics. They keep telling us that his economics are great. We just don't know it yet. They keep saying, oh, you know, like inflation is under control. Well, first of all, it's not under control, but their idea of it's being under control is that after, you know, years of it's being extremely high, it's a little less high than it was, but eggs are still, you know, what is it? I don't know, 65% higher than what they were. People see their bills, you know, they see that things are going badly. We see that our cities, you know, they keep telling us how crime is down in our cities. I don't believe it. It's possible that murder is down because they've kind of been policing that, but I don't believe that crime is down in cities where all you have to do is talk to
people. We're actually going to do a show on this soon. It's a lie. It's truly just a lie because crime spiked. And then in some instances, it fell a little from this enormous spike. It's still above normal. And on top of that, they're not prosecuting anymore. So the cops, many instances, they just don't even arrest the people because they know it's going to be a revolving door out the police station with a note with a DA who doesn't want to prosecute it. Why fill out the paperwork? Why do it? Anyway, that's another thing. But I'm amazed to hear the disdain, like the that was like another bitter clingers. It was another basket of deplorables. These anti-intellectual, you know, bitter, envious people who are Trump supporters. That's the problem. They're bitter. I mean, talk about not getting it, not even close to getting it. I want to ask you about Molly Ringwald, because before you became a star on The Daily Wire, you were a star in Hollywood, screenwriting for many big movies and very well celebrated in your writing as an author as well. And Molly Ringwald, who was, you know, the star of the day when I was a kid, you know, Breakfast Club and Pretty in Pink and all these amazing movies, 16 Candles, has now spent most of her adult life, as far as I can tell, bashing the movies. She came out in 18 and talked about John Hughes and how the movies were too, I can't remember her word, but it was something like too misogynistic and too Me Too-y. And she should have spoken out. And now she adds this to her latest running commentary at the Miami Film Festival last weekend. Take a listen.
Those movies, the movies that, you know, I'm so well known for, they were very much of a time, you know, and if you were to remake that now, I think it would have to be much more diverse and it would have to be, you know, you couldn't make a movie that white now. No, those movies are really, really very white and they don't really represent, you know, what it is to be a teenager in a school in America today, I don't think.
I'm so sick of this nonsense. So what? You're sorry that you were in a film where white people were the dominant characters? Just stop. Let us enjoy it. Shut up, for that matter. Go away so that we can just enjoy the acting version of you instead of the real. Who gives a shit what Molly Ringwald thinks about anything? Just be quiet. Let your art speak for itself. We enjoyed it, and you're making us enjoy it less with your political commentary.
You know, this is a real problem. First of all, I have to say, back in the day when she was in her prime, I was madly in love with Molly Ringwald. So my heart is breaking just a little bit. I may have to recover from this. But, you know, there is this thing going on. If you like movies, stories, where everything you watch is an act of preachment, where they're telling you not just what the world is like, which is what art is supposed to do. They're telling you what they believe the world should be. And if you don't like it, there's something wrong with you. So everybody has noticed this. There's no such thing as a white person married to another white person. There's no such thing as a male hero. I recently watched The Three Body Problem, a science fiction, an adaptation on Netflix of a science fiction novel, the novel of which I kind of enjoyed. And it was really interesting because the heroes were hard-driving physicists, all of whom were women, and the men were all these kind of slightly neurotic, passive, support staff. And I was watching this and going, I guess this is why they call it fantasy in science fiction, because that's not really what the world looks like. And it becomes kind of offensive after a while, because I don't care if you want to make a woman a hero. I don't care about who, you know, what color the person is. I care about being preached to by people I happen to know are some of the worst people in America. You know, people who are working on their fourth wife, you know, they're driving to their from divorce court and they have to pick up their kid at rehab because they never took care of them. And they're going to stand up and preach to me about what my life should be like and what the world should look like, even though it doesn't look like this. So even when Molly Ringwald is saying this, she is essentially just kowtowing to an elite cabal of mostly white people who are imposing this on artists. So artists are being told what to say. And, you know, I'm telling you, Megan, I experience this only a little bit because I'm so ornery at this point. I just won't change anything. But all I have to do in my last novel, I had a couple of remarks about transgenderism, a girl going through a phase of transgenderism before returning to sanity. And they wanted me to cut that out. And I said, you know, I'll pull this book before I cut anything out that is true simply to appease this establishment. It is the establishment. It's the powers that be. So my question is this. If the Academy, if Hollywood, if publishing, if the news industry, if the deep state are all telling us one thing, how is we supposed to think that they are serving the powerless, that they are serving the weak? They are the power. They are the elites. And so when Katie Couric says we're anti-elite, what she's talking about is, yeah, we're the people. We're, you know, we're in an uprising against a series of lies where they butchered children, where they forced us to wear masks, they forced us to take medicines we didn't want. Of course we're anti-elite. Our elites stink. Our elites just went through years of screwing things up because a little flu passed through town. We get it. You don't like us. We don't like you either. And yeah, she's right. We are anti-elite, but only because our elites are so bad. It doesn't mean that the people who are voting for Trump aren't elites in themselves. You know?
That anti-elite, she's not wrong about that, but the anti-intellectual, like, okay, right. Because they're just a bunch of dumbasses. Okay, tell it to Victor Davis Hanson. Yeah, like, okay. But to your point, Melissa Chen, who's a great follow on Twitter, was tweeting out about this NPR lady, the new CEO, and talking about how, you know, she there's a soundbite you referenced. It's too long to play right now, but she basically says you can't find truth anymore. Just have to make a good faith effort, basically. You can't really find real truth. And Wikipedia considers sites reliable under her when she was at the helm, like Vox, Slate, Mother Jones, The Nation. You know what's not? What's considered reliable? The Daily Wire, Fox News, The New York Post, The Federalist, The Daily Caller. That's her world of we're just doing our best. You know, we can't get to actual truth, but we're doing our best. This is, if you think it's just the head of Wikipedia or the head of NPR or, you know, these other organizations, you're not paying attention. They're everywhere. And they're really trying to program how our children grow up and what their values are and how we live and speak. So good for you for pushing back on your book. I'll give you the last word.
Well, I think this is one of the reasons why one thing that I strongly believe is any idea that you're going to transform Hollywood, transform the news media, transform the networks is absolutely absurd. The only right way for us to go now is to build a parallel media. And the fear there, of course, is that everybody sections off and goes into their little niche and only takes the news that they want. And that's a legitimate fear. But the more likely thing is that the people who tell the truth, the people whose predictions turn out to be true, the people whose ideas are founded in reality and therefore make reality better, are going to attract a larger audience, and then we become the competition.
Like a phoenix.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Biden went to a gas station in Moon Township, Pennsylvania. We've got a bit of the video from C-SPAN. Take a look at the hero's welcome he got. For the listening audience, there might be like five people All right. This is like a few others. I'd say we've got maybe a dozen inside. We only have the video, not the audio. No one looks enthused. Everyone's just standing around. Contrast that with Trump, who visited Harlem on Tuesday. He went to the bodega where the guy, the worker, was attacked and fought back and stabbed his attacker. And Alvin Bragg, who's prosecuting Trump, tried to charge that guy with second degree murder. And only when New York revolted against him, because the bodega owner had been attacked himself, it was self-defense, did he drop the charges. So Trump wisely went to that bodega on Tuesday, and take a look at this. This is in Harlem. Hundreds deep. That's amazing. Charles, I know you can't go by crowd size in predicting who's going to get elected. Otherwise, Trump would have won 2020 as well. But that's Harlem, New York. And Trump is like a hero.
Yeah, I think, as you say, you can't go by crowd size. But what it does tell us is something interesting about the two candidates. In that Biden is, if he is going to win because he's the safe option. He's the default choice. He's the fallback. He's the guy that people who don't like Trump, for reasons good and bad, think that they have to vote for instead. He's not somebody that anyone in America seems to be enthused about. He's not Bill Clinton. He's not Ronald Reagan. He is there. Whereas Trump inspires responses. He inspires reactions, both good and bad, and for good and bad reasons. But he is somebody who does not yield yawns or the question who. Everyone knows who he is, and they know what he's about. And you're going to see a lot of that in the election. But I do think you were right in your introduction to the question to note that this dynamic also obtained in 2020. In fact, Joe Biden hid away for most of that election, and he still won. And I think this question is going to be, this election is going to be about which candidate can maintain their hold on suburban middle-class voters. Biden has a problem with them because of inflation and crime and his treatment of Israel. And Trump has a problem with them because he's uncouth, because of what he did at the end of the last election, which was a disgrace, and because he's ill-disciplined. And you know, I think that's going to be where the election's won or lost, not in crowd size.
Mm. The problem for Joe Biden is not only that, you know, it's kind of an interesting bumper sticker. I'm here. But for Joe Biden, he's there. Hadn't heard anybody phrase it quite so succinctly. He is his the recommendation for him. The problem for, yeah, what
my
were you going to say,
Americans? My fellow Americans have a proud tradition of existence.
Exactly. That's Joe Biden's
since the
story.
Early 1940s, me and Corn Pop.
Do you guys happen to see the video on X yesterday of that woman in Brazil who tried to get some bank loan or payment that was owed to her uncle who is dead by wheeling the dead body in there? There's disturbing video, too disturbing to show. She's got the dead uncle in the bank with her. And you could see this is a dead man. And she's trying to pretend that he's alive and she's talking to him to try to get him to sign these, however it would financially benefit her. I mean, you know, I was just going to say it looked a little familiar. You know, it kind of looked a little like Jill Biden. we're not quite there. We're still with, I'm here. Not making a lot of sense, because I got to tell you, he once again came out with a nonsense story. About Uncle Bossy. He can't go 2 seconds without telling another familial lie, something about his background, his son, what have you. The latest one is about Uncle Bossy, to whom he was paying tribute as a World War II vet who died during World War II, and take a listen to what President Biden claimed about his long-lost uncle.
We called him Uncle Bosie. He was shot down. He was an Army Air Corps before there was an Air Force. He flew single-engine planes, reconnaissance flights over New Guinea. He had volunteered because someone couldn't make it. He got shot down in an area where there were a lot of cannibals in New Guinea at the time. They never recovered his body, but the government went back when I went down there and they checked and found parts of the plane and the like.
Okay, so virtually none of that was true. There is a dead uncle. He died in World War II. Was not in a single engine. He was in a double engine plane. Was not shot down. Officials say that they don't know what happened to the plane, but both engines failed. We know this because three died in the ocean, including his uncle, and one survived and went on to tell us what happened. There were no cannibals. Fact check, Jim.
Megan, the cannibals swam out to the bottom of the ocean to where the plane was, and then they ate my uncle. No. By the way, when you were playing that video of Biden in the restaurant earlier and you noticed how nonchalant everyone was, that the president of the United States just walked in there, I noticed that quite a few folks like were seated and remained seated when the president came in, which is, I believe, a violation of protocol. Even if there isn't a band there playing Hail to the Chief, like, Megan, if Joe Biden shuffled his feet into your studio right now and said, Megan, I got to tell you about my uncle and how the cannibals ate him and how terrible that was. It was right around, it was a little before I fought Corn Pop. Like you'd rise to your feet out of respect for the office, not necessarily an appreciation of them. Like you just would do it. Like, because that's what you do for the president, whether you like the guy or you don't like the guy. So one is kind of like, some part of it, me as an American is a little disappointed to see people not rising when the president enters a room, whether or not they like him. And then the second thing is that this story, we've gotten used to the president talking about his conversations with Helmut Kohl, who died many years, Francois Mitterrand, who died lots of years. He mixed up Haifa and Rafa. Okay, we're all kind of used to this. But as a result of this, Biden really has no communications oomph anymore. He only does events from between after 10 a.m. and before 4 p.m. Doesn't do a lot of night events other than the State of the Union once a year. Usually one public event a day, goes back to Delaware. Even if Israel's about to be attacked, he goes back to Delaware every weekend. And he just doesn't communicate. He reads off the teleprompter. His staff is terrified of him going off the teleprompter. And we've all gotten used to it. And we know that if he tells a story, I was raised in a Puerto Rican Jewish African-American neighborhood. And that's how I was raised. And we know this is all nonsense. We've heard these stories from our grandparents and our parents. And we love our parents and our grandparents. But we put up with those stories because we love our elderly relatives. We don't love Joe Biden. He's just a guy who showed up here. Yeah. Or the new inspiring slogan Charlie just came up with, he's here. That's all you can say. He's present.
For now.
That's it.
Being wheeled into a bank somewhere as we speak.
Yeah. I might have to show the video. It's disturbing. This is not the first lie about an uncle. I know it's bad, but you kind of can't take your eyes off of it. Uncle Frank, he lied about Uncle Frank. Remember, he said Uncle Frank received a Purple Heart. He said this back in October. My uncle won the Purple Heart in the Battle of the Bulge. And you guys fact checked it and said, no, no, he didn't. There was no, absolutely no evidence that Frank Biden received a Purple Heart, either while dead or posthumously. His name does not appear on the two major databases of honorees, Traces of War or the National Purple Heart Hall of Honor. So no Purple Heart for Uncle Frank and no cannibals for Uncle Finnegan, but he continues to spew all of this stuff. Now, you mentioned the Haifa thing. This is actually kind of interesting and worthy of a soundbite. We're going to play it. This is really clear. The Israelis are thinking about moving into Rafah, and there's been a lot of news about whether they should, this is an appropriate pause. A lot of people really want Israel to take care of it, to finish Hamas off by going into Rafah. And this is what Biden said, Satu.
And I made it clear to Israelis, don't move on Haifa. It's just not, look what we did recently when Israel was attacked.
Okay. I mean, how many times does this have to happen, Charles, right? Before somebody over on the Democratic side says, we're dead. He can't make it to, as you point out, October or November. He can't make it. We're going to have one of these that's calamitous between now and then. Or is it just he's polling within 1 point of Trump now in the national polls? Things are tightening in the swing states. Shut up. Let's go Brazilian dead uncle. That's the plan.
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the plan. He is not up to being president. And one of the really irritating things about the polarized politics that we live with at the moment, and about the fact that this is another election fought between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, is that whatever you say about either person, someone will immediately pop up and say, but what about the other one? Well, all right, but let's stipulate that. Let's say, for the sake of argument, that Donald Trump is disqualified from being president. Let's say that Donald Trump is a pathological liar. Then we can evaluate Biden. So Biden, as we established in the last segment, and anyone who has looked at the last 40 years of Biden's public career can attest, is a habitual liar. The man lies about everything. Mm-hmm. He makes up stories. He contradicts himself. He bends and twists other people's grief so that he can spin stories of his own suffering that mostly are not true. Biden's relationship with the truth is disgraceful. And saying, but what about Trump, doesn't change that. The same is true with his abilities as a president, or lack thereof. Again, forget Trump. I'm not saying this is the view that everyone should take, but just for the sake of this conversation, let's say everything that everyone says about Trump is true. Now let's talk about Biden and that clip. There is no one in this country who would look at that man, absent a desire for him to beat someone else, and say he should be president. He is quite clearly, in and of itself, per se, unfit to be president. He's too old. He doesn't know what's going on. He projects no confidence or ability or knowledge. I don't mean this in a conspiratorial sense. Quite clearly, his staff are running the show. This is embarrassing. It's a huge problem. And all you need to do, if you want confirmation of this, is ask people in other countries who tend to be left of center relative to the United States, whether or not they think Joe Biden is up to being president. And they will laugh. Immediately, they will laugh and say, no, he looks like a skull. This is a problem. And I think because we've got into this horrendous dichotomy once again, Trump v. Biden, hurrah, then we've almost lost our ability to evaluate and interrogate these questions in and of themselves without reference to the other person. But once you do it, you want to have a very stiff drink very soon.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Trump today was out there saying, I can't believe we weren't able to strike more jurors. But the problem is you have these peremptory challenges and then you have challenges for cause. And your peremptory ones, where you can just bounce them for no reason, you don't have to tell the judge why you're bouncing them, are limited in number. And I think each side has used 6 and they only get 10. Do I have my numbers right?
Correct.
So
you are correct.
Each side has used 6. They can only bounce 4 more without telling the judge why they're bouncing him or her. All the others have to be for cause. And you tell me, Jonas, saying like, judge, they read the Washington Post and the New York Times. That's not going to do it.
That's true. And when you're selecting a jury, you don't want to waste your challenges because you don't know who's coming in the room. You don't know who's going to be seated in that box that you're going to question. So you kind of have to hedge your bets a little bit. And that's probably what's going on here. And based on what this judge has ruled thus far up to this point, not just in jury selection, he's not going to err on the side of Donald Trump. And if I could talk about this last juror specifically, I'm all for attorneys being on the jury panel. I think attorneys should take over if they get seated on a jury. But this guy is a little scary because he knew how to stay middle of the darn road. And those are the jurors that are trying to be jurors. What attorney do you guys know, both lawyers, what attorney do you know who'd want to be on any jury unless it's Donald Trump or maybe Johnny Depp? Nobody.
I wanted to be on a jury. Yeah,
I just served on a jury.
I served on a jury too.
You did not. Oh my goodness.
Greatest experience ever.
What kind of case was it?
I had a plaintiff's case, and it was a man who had 3 fingertips severed and was suing the doctor who successfully reattached 2 of them, but they were transposed. So his middle fingertip was on his pointer finger.
Oh my God.
No liability.
What? No liability. You voted for the defense?
No, I ended up being an alternate.
Oh, womp womp.
It's like going to the prom with your cousin. Like, yeah, I like my cousin, but I don't want to go to the, like, it was horrible. But they found, my fellow jurors found no liability because the 2 fingertips survived and
they still worked.
Oh my God. It makes it so much harder to give somebody the finger. Which one do you lift now? What's the dominant part of the middle finger? It's unclear. I served on a jury years ago. I was co-anchoring, Jonna, you and I were together back in these days. I was co-anchoring America's Newsroom with Hemmer. This is back, we launched that show in 07 and it went through 10 with the 2 of us at the helm. And I got called for jury duty like we all do. And I got seated and I disclosed that I had just done 10 years at Jones Day. And normally they'd say a corporate litigator at Jones Day, that's bad for the defense. This is a criminal trial. Somebody like me would get bounced. The prosecution was like, she's good, we're good. And I've been much more prosecution oriented in my commentary anyway. So I would have thought the defense would have bounced me, but you know what happened?
Yeah.
The defense lawyer, when he got up there to do the voir dire of the prospective jurors, including me, said, Ms. Kelly, crossing his arms, if I put you on this jury, will you put me on TV?
Sense of humor.
That happened. I remember just laughing. And in my head, I'm thinking, kind of depends on how you do. You know, like, are you a good talker? Like, you know what? Anyway, we all found against his client and found his client guilty because it was very clear it was a drug case. Anyway, this so far is not looking good for Trump. I agree with you guys. He's doing the best he can with this jury pool. There's like at least some ambiguity about each one of them, or at least one thing to hope for. But I don't know. Just keep in mind, audience. Need one miracle, just one miracle in order to set this off. Last but not least, he was accused of juror intimidation by this judge yesterday. I thought this was rather extraordinary. We pulled a soundbite of the New York Times' Suzanne Craig on MSNBC explaining what happened. Take a listen. Stop 5.
The juror number one, had taken a video at a distance of what looked like a celebration in the streets of New York for when Trump lost in 2020. I think that was it. Mm-hmm. And it showed that she was biased and there was some language that suggested that she might have a bias. She said she happened to take the video. She thought it was a very New York moment, and she posted it. We didn't have the cameras on, so we didn't have a visual of Donald Trump at this point from the overflow room that I sit in. We have closed circuit TVs, but the judge there was some back and forth between the lawyers, and then the judge actually admonished the former president because he was huffing and puffing and gesturing towards the juror. The judge said it was completely inappropriate, and he said, "I won't tolerate it. I won't have any jurors intimidated in this courtroom." Mm. And his lawyer had to go speak to him. So that was like a moment.
Hmm. Jonna, what do you make of that exchange?
You know, what I take away from the exchange is just how much I do not have respect for the judge presiding over this case. And maybe that's not a popular opinion, but, you know, look, I've sat next to clients during jury selection. They have to talk to you. Sometimes they're too loud in any sort of trial situation. Sometimes they're not. You know, this judge needs to get off Donald Trump's back, like, for God's sake. So I don't think it really was a moment that this reporter was talking about. It was just another way that this judge could wield some sort of weird power over Donald Trump in his courtroom.
Mm-hmm. What's weird, Vinny, is, so just to clarify, it appears that this woman trying to get on the jury, it was found that she had made two Facebook posts the day of the 2020 presidential election. And she had previously said she had no biases against Donald Trump, but the posts were of people celebrating the fact that he had lost. And she tried to say to the judge, the juror perspective, she just wanted to capture, quote, a New York City celebratory moment, likening the cheers to the nightly celebrations for healthcare workers during the COVID-19 pandemic. She was dismissed appropriately, but that's another instance of somebody, in my view, lying to get on the jury. And Trump, when she was being cross-examined, all of this, allegedly uttered something, who was 12 feet away from him. And the judge said to the Trump lawyer, your client was audibly uttering something. I don't know what he was uttering. So if you don't know what he was uttering, why are you accusing him of witness or juror intimidation?
Yeah, that's problematic. Now, part of our system of justice is that criminal defendants are supposed to participate in their own defense. It's their life that is on the line, their liberty that's on the line here. So that's why they're there, and that's why they have to be there. Now, the level of how loud your voice can be when speaking with your attorney, I don't know. If he says something directly to a juror, I get it. But if you're communicating with your attorney, I don't know. I'd have to see it. And we need to put cameras in the courtroom and broadcast.
Yes.
But yep. The state
at
of New York.
At least audio, Vinny, right? At least audio.
No. Video and audio. New York used to permit cameras. The law, there was a sunset provision, and then they never allowed them back in. To me, it's about transparency. And in a case like this, this is the exact case that needs to be broadcast because of the nature of it. You're getting secondhand reports about it, number one, so no one can actually see it. Number two, you want to trust the system. How do you trust a system that hides what's happening, right?
Yeah.
So I don't understand that. That, to me, that's another big problem in all of this.
Okay, one other thing on the Trump case. So Trump, at the end of the day, keeps coming out and making statements, Jonna. And yesterday, he made a statement about, he was trying to say, how is this turning into, like, you know, I doctored my corporate books? What he did was he or his team paid Michael Cohen the $130,000 that Cohen had paid to Stormy Daniels to get her to not speak out about their alleged affair. And it was marked down on the books as a legal expense. Trump was, you know, or someone on his behalf paying this to a lawyer who represented Trump. Now, one of the questions in the case is who actually authorized the payment and made the payment, and then who wrote down in the books that it was a legal expense? Because the odds are it wasn't Donald Trump who wrote that down, you know, in the books. Well, he made this comment after court yesterday that now has people saying, oh my God, it was an admission. He tried to fix it, but he admitted it. Take a listen and saw it. Three.
That was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense. Some accountant
I didn't know. Marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you've been indicted over that?
Okay. So he started to say that I was paying a lawyer and we marked it down as a legal expense. And then he corrects himself. An accountant did. And now there's speculation that'll be played in court to prove to this jury, and they don't have this proof otherwise, that Trump knew and authorized and maybe even participated in how it would be recorded.
Any criminal defense attorney will tell you, just don't say anything, right? Ever, right? But you're not going to be able to stop him. Now, the question is, are they going to play? They have to play the whole thing, I would think, the whole thing. So if the prosecution puts this in, are they also allowing him to testify without being cross-examined? It's a double-edged sword. As much as they want to say, oh, here he is making an admission, well, he's also got the complete explanation, which means now he can give his side of what happened here without getting on the witness stand and without being cross-examined. So I would be a little less anxious as the prosecution to necessarily put that in. I mean, I always say this, and it was in the George Zimmerman case was the same thing, where the prosecution in that case put in all of George Zimmerman's statements, and they were self-serving, but they believed that, oh, the jury's not going to buy it. But he never had to testify because his whole story through the videos brought in by the prosecution told his story. So as a prosecutor, I would not put that in. But if they do, we'll see what happens.
Very good point. And plus, like when you speak colloquially, sometimes you say, I or we, and you don't necessarily mean yourself. It's like, I'll say, oh, I have this soundbite. It's like, well, who gave me the soundbite? My team. I didn't cut the soundbite. I don't mean that I personally cut the soundbite.
I'm Megyn Kelly, host of The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM. It's your home for open, honest, and provocative conversations with the most interesting and important political, legal, and cultural figures today. You can catch The Megyn Kelly Show on Triumph, a Sirius XM channel featuring lots of hosts you may know and probably love. Great people like Dr. Laura, Glenn Beck, Nancy Grace, Dave Ramsey, and yours truly, Megyn Kelly. You can stream The Megyn Kelly Show on Sirius XM at home or anywhere you are, no car required. I do it all the time. I love the Sirius XM app. It has ad-free music, coverage of every major sport, comedy, talk, podcast, and more. Subscribe now. Get your first 3 months for free.
Go to SiriusXM.com/MKShow to subscribe and get 3 months free. That's SiriusXM.com/MKShow and get 3 months free. Offer details apply.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/MK. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/MK.
Joy Reid is super happy about DEI and its effects on the 2024 presidential election. She's calling it out. Listen to her.
For me, there is something wonderfully poetic about the fact that despite the fact that even if convicted, he's not going to go to prison, the first person to actually criminally prosecute Donald Trump is a black Harvard grad, the very kind of person that his former staff, the people who worked for him, Stephen Miller, et cetera, want to never be at Harvard law school, but he was. And a black woman is doing that same exact thing in Georgia. And a black woman forced you to pay $175 million fine. Donald Trump is being held to account by the very multicultural, multiracial democracy that he's trying to dismantle. And for me, there's something poetic and actually wonderful about that. It says something good about our country that we're still capable of having that happen. Go DEI. My DEIs are bringing it home.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, like when I think about representation in our democracy, what I really think about is taking a misdemeanor charge in the state of New York, one that wasn't going to be prosecuted by the DOJ or Cy Vance, and trumping it up into 40 felony charges and deciding there's an underlying crime with an FEC violation, again, that was not previously charged. That is representation.
That's what it is.
You know, and that's the ridiculous nature of all of this, Megan, right? It's like the facts be damned, right? Like the subsection C before the United States Supreme Court, the subsection C that is supposed to apply to financial crimes done by like Enron and Arthur Anderson can be applied to everybody on January 6th, and Donald Trump can have a misdemeanor trumped up to 40 felonies. That doesn't matter to them. What matters is the representation.
Well, Michael, there was a woman, a solicitor, that was arguing it before the court. What are these details that you're talking about? That's not
right. Just take the W, Duncan. My
it's God. Just it's just lawlessness dressed up. You know?
Can I say that? Can I say, oh, my DEIs, there's my DEI, Alvin Bragg, there he is. Is that how that works? If she
sounds
can adopt
racist.
White woman hair, can I adopt her black woman DEIs, my DEIs? Is that a thing?
I think if you take a step back, it's deranged and disturbing of essentially you are doing everything you can to divide Americans. That's the whole equity thing of being like, you know what? I'm really happy that there's a lot of black people out here who can prosecute a white person. This sounds like it's a very healthy thing to celebrate. And then the rest of the people on the TV panel clap like seals. Like, yeah, good idea. Let's try to divide Americans by their race and pit them against each other. This seems healthy.
But also can talk about their DEIs and the power that they're bringing in the same breath of condemning Clarence Thomas.
Yeah, of course.
And the Supreme Court, right? It's like,
great point.
No. It's not actually DEIs that you're concerned about. It's progressive liberals that you're in any sort of form or shape. And that's
and how gross is she to bring Stephen Miller into it? Stephen Miller, she's talking about America First Legal. Yeah, I'm sure they did oppose the affirmative action program that was unlawful as held by the Supreme Court. It's not Stephen Miller's fault. It's the fault of the people who put it in place contrary to the Constitution. You're not allowed to have that kind of a program. And the Supreme Court's been telegraphing that it would go away for 20 years. And now finally it has. So, but no, for Joy Reid, it means he doesn't want black people at Harvard. All the black people in the world can get into Harvard just as long as they can get into Harvard, Joy Reid. That's it. Have them get somewhat decent grades. Right now, it's much easier to get into Harvard as a young black or man or woman than it is to be any other race, guaranteed. So just stop, okay? Stop. There's no problem getting black people to Harvard as long as they have somewhat decent grades. She's a liar. And it's not going to happen anymore because of Stephen Miller. She just loves to gin up racial enmity wherever she can.
Yeah, I'd love to know her opinion on like a male Asian American getting into Harvard.
Yeah,
I would happen to think her opinion might be a little bit different. How suddenly, that's not DEI.
Nope.
That one doesn't work. That one doesn't fit.
That doesn't qualify. So I was going to show you this, too. Just talking about like the way the media is approaching the Trump cases. That's her. Like, she's so proud that everybody's black involved. All the prosecutors are black. Yay me. That's what she's saying. I mean, can you imagine? It's like, seriously, think about if I were like, well, I'm just so proud that like, all the whites are going after the blacks now. It makes me feel so good.
God,
like, I feel
crazy.
Wonderful. That's basically what she's saying. It's like she gets away with it because blacks are 14% of the American population, but like virtually none of them feel the way she does. Only lunatic white women on the Upper West Side share her views or in Seattle or San Francisco. She doesn't speak for the black community. You know, I have actually many black friends and people in my life. They'd be appalled if they saw that clip. She's disgusting. She gets away with it over and over because she's on MSNBC. And what I'm just sick of her nonsense. But
and
anyway.
It's the same way defund the police polls. Like if you ask black voters their thoughts on defund the police, they say without a doubt, absolutely not. Except for the talking heads on TV and the white liberals in the Northeast and on the coast. they're the ones who push this idea, thinking, oh, you know, I want to be helpful to my DEIs. So I think defunding like the police NPR is the way to do it. 100%.
Yeah. Okay. So here is George Stephanopoulos over the weekend trying to cross-examine Chris Sununu of New Hampshire, the governor who was behind Nikki Haley and now has said he's going to go with Team Trump. I mean, he's a Republican. And trying, I mean, we just put a montage together of the questions. And you tell me whether you think George Stephanopoulos understands the right half of America and came to this with a fair and impartial approach. Watch.
Will your support for Donald Trump continue even if he's convicted? So I'm asking you about right and wrong. You think it's you're comfortable with the idea of supporting someone who's convicted? On January 11, 2021, you said that President Trump's rhetoric and actions contributed to the insurrection. So please explain, given the fact that you believe he contributed to an insurrection, how you can say we should have him back in the Oval Office. So just to sum up, you would support him for president even if he's convicted in classified documents. You support him for president even though you believe he contributed to an insurrection. You support him for president even though you believe he's lying about the last election. You'd support him for president even if he's convicted in the Manhattan case. I just want to say the answer to that is yes, correct?
Yeah, me and 51% of America.
what a wonderful clip, Megan, and just a demonstration of ABC's deep and abiding commitment to DEI and everything it stands for by hiring a Democrat press secretary to once again anchor the news at their broadcasting network.
Oh, it's amazing.
Like he doesn't get it. He doesn't get it. Like the right half of the country doesn't see these things as rising to the level of criminality. They haven't been treated as crimes when we've had these so-called insurrections by the Democrats challenging elections or turning over police stations, as we talked about earlier, setting them on fire, courthouses as well, all just completely ignored. They're having trouble finding their outrage vein on these Trump behaviors because it's so one-sided. Even the documents case, your guy did that too. Your guy did that and he took the documents when he wasn't even president, George. I will say, I don't think Sununu was all that effective in responding to it, but it was just a complete skewering by an unfair journalist. And by the way, why do Republicans keep going on these shows? Because you're just there to be their little...
That's a better question. I don't know the answer to that question. I certainly wouldn't recommend it to anybody that I was advising. Seems like Stephanopoulos has stepped on a lot of rakes lately.
Yeah.
By the way, you had that Nancy Mace thing, right? And then now this thing. But I to the larger point here that he can't conceptualize, it's sort of amazing to me. I can only imagine what your information flow and your silo of information and socialization looks like when you can't understand, even if you are a Trump critic and you have had a huge problem with January 6th and you didn't like any of the post-2020 stuff and you don't like him personally and you think he's offensive, but you're a conservative and you're a Republican and you're looking out at a absolutely feeble president of the United States that's running this country down to the ground domestically and abroad, mm-hmm. and you have a binary choice between the two, I don't understand why it's from a conception standpoint, mm-hmm. like, why don't you understand? Yeah, Biden is that bad.
Well, he can't get it. He's like, I talked to my friends at Soho House and I was at Dean and DeLuca having a coffee and everyone said that like Biden's doing a great job. Like
right. In the Hamptons too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also really love that the Protect Our Democracy coalition of Democrats and the media and the party, like suddenly want you as a Republican to be like, no, you know, the voters who voted for Donald Trump in this Republican primary made him the nominee. They're wrong. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's mm-hmm. actually profoundly undemocratic what they're hoping that they can convince some Republican talking heads to do.
Also, the same crew that expressed absolutely no outrage about the fact that this White House tried to cancel all of their primaries and just renominate the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. Very pro-democratic position, right? Very pro-democratic.
And remove Trump from the ballot in several states. Right. Very pro-democracy.
Also democracy.
But that's what you get when the internal conversations at your network look like the internal conversations at the DNC. If you had half of that network who was Republicans, half of that network were Democrats, they would have internal fights to recenter the perspective of the way they're approaching the news They don't have that now. There's nobody pushing back on him in the pre-meetings to say, hey, here's what half the country thinks, man. You should really approach it this way if you want to actually get real news that the middle of the country is interested in. They don't have any of that. And it's the same problem that they have at NPR, they have at ABC, they have at NBC, they have at CBS. There are no Republicans working at these networks. And until they get at least half, I don't think Republicans need to go on. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's a perversion.
Guarantee they patted him on the back after that. They were probably doing high fives after that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you killed him, George. Just like, you rocked it.
Just like the press secretary in Ilhan Omar's office pats her on the back when she goes on MSNBC. It's the same concept. It's a Democrat operation. It's not a news organization anymore.
Yeah, it's just a perversion of all of these shows and the way that we cover news today on a lot of these networks. Because, yeah, I mean, look, you remember back in the day, Tim Russert himself, a former Democratic operative in many ways. But when he got into that sort of prosecutorial back and forth, what it was always about in his era was trying to get answers for things he felt like people were obfuscating from.
Right.
It wasn't a partisan prosecution based on a point of view that only half of this country actually holds.
Right.
It was about trying to get answers on things like the Iraq War or things that were affecting this country. And he was trying to just pin people down. They have taken that model of a confrontational question and answer style to, you know, public officials and just layered on top of it absolute blatant bald-faced partisanship as what you're trying to get out of an interview.
The new model of journalism. We've come a long way from Tim Russert. I give you Gayle King and Charles Barkley in their now defunct after 6 months show on CNN. Look at a mashup here.
Like, it's so much noise coming out of D.C. How are you able to work your way through that every day?
Because we can also say he's a truth teller, because when Bob Costas sat down in the seat, can I please get a close-up shot of my face? He sat down and he goes, God, that thing's getting bigger. Look,
it's
getting bigger. Yeah. Hopefully it won't get so big.
Now, do you ever just like, hey, you know what? Can we just talk about issues and not talk about all the noise and the extracurricular stuff?
Yes.
If you have a disagreement with a coworker and they start giving you the salad treatment, how do you handle that?
Personally, I respond in kind. If you give me the silent treatment, I'm going to pretend you don't exist.
Really? I hear that you get a lot of questions from people talking about smelly coworkers.
You have to say something. It's just like, excuse me, but are you dealing with something? Do you have a hormonal issue? Is the water not working at your home?
Something tells me, Charles, this will not be the last, just saying, this will not be the last time that we're working together.
Call me, Gil.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the under.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take the under on that.
That show was on for 6 months? For
it's
real?
It's done. They only had 14 episodes. They were drawing an average of 459,000 total viewers, 100,000 in the key demo of 25 to 54. That's a nightmare. They were up against Gutfeld just for comparison.
Ooh, that'll do
He's getting 2.2 million total. 320,000 in the demo. Even Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC had 1.5 million up against this. This was a nightmare. Absolutely nobody watched it. And the only thing CNN is able to say is it wasn't a failure because we attracted an audience that was 44% non-white.
Oh my God.
That's a metric for success. That's it. Well, that's amazing. I was listening to, I'm kind of a fan of Charles Barkley and his NBA and basketball analysis. Yeah. And I was listening to a sports talk thing when this whole thing was announced. And he's like, yeah, man, all my friends tell me this is a tremendous mistake. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. And I was like, well, I guess you did. Right. I guess we did find out. It wasn't.
It was a mistake.
Do you,
do you feel like people
didn't want a close up of Gayle King's cold sore? Is that what we were seeing there on her? I don't know what she was calling attention to on her lip.
It's probably ill-advised.
I mean, they should be ashamed. They subjected people of color to that garbage. It's enhanced interrogation or portraits. Depends on your
view.
They
can't find good TV and are listening on NPR. Now CNN is gone. I guess it's back to Ruthless. Thanks for listening to The Megyn Kelly Show. No BS, no agenda, and no fear.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night. No matter how chaotic your day is, conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute, and craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.